Welcome into another episode of A Colorado Craft Podcast by Mile High Bourbon and Rye. My name is Zach. I'm the host of the show, and I'm sitting down here with Mitch and Josh of Branch and Barrel Distilling. Mitch and Josh, thank you guys so much for having me out. Really excited to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for coming out.
Yeah, thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Been really pumped for this one for a minute, so can't wait to talk to you guys and get some more information. So I guess let's start it off. I know you've said you've been here for about 3-ish years. How'd you guys get started with the distillery?
I think we both started almost exactly the same time, within a few weeks of one another. Definitely very, very different introduction stories too. I'll let you start.
Yeah, so mine is fascinating. So I actually applied for the position in Houston, Texas during COVID.
Okay.
And they took a chance on me. They liked my resume. I was a spirits educator. I have a lot of credentials, blah, blah, blah. No one cares about any of that. But they did offer me the position and said, you'll have to come here. It's not remote. And I said, absolutely. Got a apartment unseen, showed up in 2 weeks, and was working here in Denver.
So, all right. So just upended it all and came out here. That's a heck of a commitment to start the job. That's awesome.
I love this company. I mean, during the interview, I had a bottle of their bourbon on my desk talking about it.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed what Branch and Barrel has done from the beginning. Even though I didn't live here, every time I came in, I picked up a bottle. I got to hang out with, you know, just people who enjoyed it. And seeing the opportunity to become a part of Branch and Barrel's story and be the one behind it.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to turn it down. There was nothing that was going to stop me from getting here.
So before we get to yours, Josh, do you have family that you were visiting out here and that's how you discovered it, or just happenstance?
I
found out about them and thought you enjoyed the whiskey.
I've been vacationing in Colorado for many years.
Okay.
It's been kind of my happy place. Like, people are like, where do you want to go now that you have some time off? I'm like, I'm going to Colorado. There's so much variety here and there's so much to see and do. And it gets me out of the 110 degree heat of Houston. So it's always been a joy to just come, and I'm a whiskey guy. I'm always going to buy local whiskey when I do. So that's how I ended up with it.
Oh, that's awesome. And how about you?
So I came from bartending.
Okay.
Most recently. I've worked at breweries. I've worked at bars. I've worked at a fine wine shop for a little while. So beer and wine is kind of my alcohol background.
Yeah.
And it's funny. It was almost a similar but different situation with my learning about Branch and Barrel. I was working at a bar here in town called Max Taps at the time, and somebody had brought the owner a bottle that he had sitting on his desk, and he never opened it because he didn't really drink whiskey. But he was finally like, oh, you guys can just have it. Like, you know, I don't think I'm ever going to drink this. You guys are welcome to it. So we all tried it after a shift one night, and we're like, wow, this is like some of the best whiskey I've ever had. And it just so happened that I was also learning about whiskey at the time. I'd gotten a good amount of education at the fine wine shop I was working with, just from different reps who'd come in and taste us on different things.
Yeah.
It got me curious enough to where I was like, okay, if I ever have the opportunity to move into this, I'd be really interested in it. And then getting to taste Branch and Barrel at the bar, I was like, okay, so somebody nearby is producing really, really good whiskey. And it just so happened that a few weeks later, after learning about it, one of their sales reps started coming in. At the time, Branch and Barrel sales rep started coming into our bar. And I got to know her that way, just over the bar, serving drinks to her. And we got to talking, and she was like, you know, we're actually looking to expand our sales team at some point. Would you be interested? And so I said, yeah, absolutely. And so she got me in for an interview, kind of a similar thing. They took a chance on me. I actually have had some sales training, but I don't think I had exactly what they were looking for. So they were willing to roll the dice there as well. They have a good history of doing that, though, as far as giving people a fair shake. And so they brought me on in a sales capacity. I worked on the sales team for about 2 years, really helped them grow the footprint in Colorado, and then had the opportunity to move into operations where I am now.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So, I mean, hearing the take a chance on you guys to get it launched, I mean, that's got to speak to kind of the company and why you stick around for multiple years, right? Like, clearly seems like it's a good place to work. What all about, like, kind of, do you have the story of how Branch and Barrel sort of started, particularly maybe the name behind Branch and Barrel?
Absolutely. I'm happy to cover that. So it started, the company itself started officially in 2016.
Okay.
The name itself it's kind of fun. So originally the owners were distilling out of their garage on hot water heater stills with turkey fryers for their fermenters. And at the time, you know, they were producing enough to fill a barrel for whiskeys, but that's what they wanted to make, though, their whiskey heads. So they decided to take charred tree branches from the backyard and age their whiskey in mason jars with those tree branches.
Okay.
So originally the branches were their barrels.
Gotcha.
Now, fast forward to today, we are actually aging product on branches and in barrels. So we continue that trend today.
That's awesome.
Branch and barrel.
Branch and barrel.
That's okay. That's way cool. Because I had not heard that. I've been down here once before. I didn't get the spiel at the time. But that's really cool. They're still using branches. I like that a lot.
It's worth noting, too, that back in the origin story days, part of what motivated the owners to start this project in the first place was that they wanted to produce a Colorado expression of whiskey. And they had Kentucky. They wanted to try something a little bit different, and they wanted to make something that was unique to this state. So that was a big part of why they chose to do it the way they did.
Yeah, that was them actually opening up in 2016. Like, I gave you the name, but that was the big draw, was that, you know, there were two of them that really loved bourbon, but Kentucky wasn't their vibe. Not a lot of people were doing Colorado craft, like Josh said. And they were like, well, if you can't find it, make it. And so they set out to do that. Worked with another one of our owners to build all of our equipment. So everything is hand-built. I know you won't be able to see it on camera, but in the corner over there is our second still we ever used.
Oh, no
it is our 20-gallon hot water heater still that was built by the owner.
I'll get a picture of that, and I can add it in so people watching beautiful. On YouTube can see it, because that's awesome.
Yeah, we went from that to a Campbell soup cooker. We are now using distilled water plant tanks, and there's old condiment tanks for our fermenters. It's actually funny. So one of the owners did construction, one did real estate, one did plumbing. And so the plumber built all of the tanks. They did all the equipment. The construction guy, contract worker, he did all of our cement and drains. And then our distiller was actually this building's electrician originally, and he ran all the electrical for our unit. So we have literally, as a company, taken this old automotive complex and turned it into a distillery ourselves.
Wicked.
Yeah, it's cool. It's interesting. So the tour here is very fascinating, because you could see how everything was put together and know that that was all us. This was not prefabricated in any way. But to make that Colorado craft like we were talking about, they hired on Rick, who was inspired by George Washington.
Okay.
And that's actually how we ended up on our mash bill, was because back in the day, George Washington was considered one of the great craft distillers of America, producing corn whiskey in a predominantly rye-heavy area in the Northeast.
Okay.
And so we do a predominantly strong corn mash inspired by what is considered the original craft distiller. Just to try to keep that Colorado craft alive.
Yeah. Well, and my understanding, too, is, as far as keeping it Colorado, pretty much everything from top to bottom is Colorado for branch and barrel, correct?
Yeah, they were using Colorado grains back when they were making a hooch on a hot water heater.
Yep.
They were Colorado trees they were aging the moonshine on. And they've really taken that to heart. It helps that Scott has a lot of agricultural connections.
Okay.
So he's been able to strike some pretty great relationships with farmers. Like, we work with somebody up in Fort Morgan for our corn, and then we work with proximity farms down in Monta Vista area for everything else. But because our whiskey is very corn heavy, it's about 80% corn in our mash bill, that's kind of the important one.
Yeah.
And because of that relationship, we have a great deal on high quality corn, and that's, we've been able to really take that and run with it. And that's, we haven't needed to go outside of Colorado, thankfully. You know, we have great water too. It's a lot of these things are Scott, but he has property throughout the state. He's got a couple wells on his properties that tap the Arapaho Aquifer. So when, we're not necessarily getting our Rocky Mountain snowmelt water the traditional way, but we are getting it, ground filtered after years of hanging out in the aquifer. And so it is very clean, very pure, and it makes terrific whiskey. So Colorado grains, Rocky Mountain snowmelt, made here in-house.
Awesome.
Trying to do it the Colorado way.
That's wicked. I love that because, obviously for people who have listened, if you guys have listened to any of it, that's been the focus top to bottom. It's everything Colorado. That's what I want to have this all be about. And hearing that you not only are a Colorado whiskey, but like every step of the process is keeping it in Colorado is just really, really cool. So the glass that we've got poured here, I want to talk a little bit about this one, because they opened in 2016, and this is the one that you guys just released not too long ago, the Lucky Seven. So a 7-year-old whiskey, and it's your oldest to date, correct?
Yeah, it's the oldest one we've ever put in a bottle.
And that means that this was put in just 2 years after production really started here.
Yeah, that I guess that's true. Yeah, it was 2018. Yep. Yeah.
So, wow. I mean, that's crazy to think that that's come up to here. Tell me a little bit about, like, how did you, the 7-year be the age that this decided to get barreled? Like, is there any story behind, or bottled, sorry?
We've been wanting to release, like, hey, what's the oldest thing we could possibly put out right now for a while, just mm-hmm. kicking it around. And we hadn't reached 7 yet when that conversation started. And this is the point where we're going to give a little shout out to Jay at Par Hopper and Winston at the local drive. They're friend. We've known those guys a long time. We've worked with them on a few different things. And
yeah.
We're just kind of, you know, drinking conversations, just, you know, hey, what if we collaborated on this barrel pick and, you know, we'll help you guys push it and we'll, you know, kind of make it a three-way partnership team effort on that. And so I think they, through that conversation, that was what pushed us to really say, like, all right, we're going to do this. We're going to do this as soon as we can, and we're going to do it as soon as we have a barrel that Mitch, as our master blender, is content with. Like, is, you know, we want to make sure that what we're releasing, we're not going to rush it. We want it to represent all the work and time that's gone into it. And it just so happened that this particular barrel, you know, you were really enthusiastic on this one, and we all kind of agreed, like, all right, I think we can be proud of this if we put it out. We don't feel like we're rushing it. We don't feel like we're taking a shortcut here. And those guys were really stoked about it as well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it really came together in a nice way between just a bunch of friends drinking whiskey and saying, all right, we're going
to
do this.
That's the best way to get anything to really happen, right? Yeah. It's a bunch of friends drinking whiskey. I just took a sip of it. First time I've got to try it, of course. But, I mean, I know you kind of touched on it. It is big. You're right. It's thick. It's almost, not quite, but almost chewy even. Like, just very big and bold mouthfeel. I like that a lot. When you're tasting these to decide this is good, like, what are you looking for? Because obviously, coming straight out of the barrel, you may or may not cut it down. How are you choosing what is ready to go?
So it depends on the goal of the project, right? In this case, single barrels, typically, I have a different set of rules that I look for aside from blending.
Because
if I'm putting together a project, you know, I'm trying to elevate certain flavors, dampen others, like, make it rounded and where I want it. Single barrels like this, one of my biggest focuses is mouthfeel and just feeling of whiskey.
Okay.
Because I feel like that's something that goes by the wayside too often in bourbon, is it may have a flash of color on the palate and then it just falls off a cliff and disappears. And then you're sitting there going, what did that taste like? I got to try it again to remember. I find that that's a pet peeve of mine. I feel like I can't enjoy my whiskey if I can't remember what it tastes like.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so I specifically aim for barrels like this where it's very oily, it's viscous, it's almost chewy.
Yeah.
And it's something that, like, even now I'm talking, I can still taste the caramel, butterscotchy, minty kind of flavor on the sides of my tongue. So I don't have to wonder, what did that taste like? It's like, I could tell you now what it tastes like because it's so rich.
The impression of the texture, even. Like, I can still feel that, like, nice oily weight of it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, after this, like, you finish the sip, that hangs around for a very long time, which I agree. I think that's something that in a lot of whiskeys ends up getting kind of, like you said, kind of dropped by the wayside because, you know, I don't know necessarily why. I don't get to go choose the barrels or do all of that, but it does seem like sometimes they're just a little bit lighter, and that maybe, I guess, more marketable for bigger brands that way. That could be. And then people with smaller brands are trying to mimic that. So I love that this is kind of a little bit off from what that is. And then partnered with, at the same time, because you guys did partner with Par Hopper for that as well, you released that Riceratops, the Peach Riceratops.
Peach Riceratops.
I need to get a bottle of that just to have at home so that my daughter can look at the label with the Triceratops on it. She loves dinosaurs.
It's real good, too.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Launchpad Brewing as well, right? So that's an Old Elk barrel, goes to Launchpad, comes here. How long did you guys age the rye for?
Oh, the rye itself, I'd have to look. I think it was 4.5 years before it went in. I think
it was at least four.
Yeah, I think it ended up being a 5-year, but it might have been 4.5. It might have been just under 5 years total.
Yeah, it was in the Old Elk barrel for what, 6 months?
Yeah, we aged it with the peach for about 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah, that was kind of a bonus project. That was just one of the lovely things about working with Jay. He's got so many connections in the industry. He's just like, hey, I have this cool barrel. You guys want to do something with it? Hell yeah, we do.
Yeah, and then put together a product that's, I mean, pretty unique sounding too. I don't think I've seen anything peach rye. And I love that it's peach, but you're not like adding peach flavoring to it. You're getting it from a peach beer. That to me is what makes it like super special. So I'm definitely... That's one that's going home with me if I can pull that off.
We really like to do a lot, like you were saying, local. So we like to do a lot of local partnerships with breweries, with wineries, even with other spirits producers. We've been looking at some other projects potentially down the road. But the fact that we were able to use something from Launchpad that was so robust in flavor.
Yeah.
Like, we would not need to add peach to this. Like,
right.
It is so delightfully peachy.
Okay.
With all those nice rye spices, that grassiness behind it, it's wonderful. It's kind of, you know what it does remind me of is those old, like, the green tea Nestes, like, where it was, like, the peach green teas.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost in that realm, but spicy rye whiskey.
Okay.
I know. Like,
no, that do I need to say awesome. More? No, I wouldn't even need to try that. You described that to me, I'd want to buy a bottle right away. So that's awesome. When you're doing these collaborations, what do you think is kind of one of the more wild collaborations that you've got to do? Or most fun? Like something that you were just, this is a blast and I'm pumped to do it.
I suppose it depends on what end of the spectrum we talk about.
Yeah. There have been some that would have been truly wild that we unfortunately opted not to do.
Okay.
That Saison. What was it? No,
that's still aging, actually.
No, that one did happen. What was the one that most recently?
Oh, that was, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The IPA.
Yeah, we had a peppercorn pea whiskey we put out.
Yes.
And then we gave that barrel to Elizabeth Brewing Company, who aged a pink peppercorn IPA in that peppercorn pea whiskey barrel.
Interesting.
Right. Already interesting.
Yep.
Which the beer was very good. We got it back, and it had a bunch of hops and stuff, which is fine. But
yep.
We were going to age gin in it.
Ooh, okay. And I could see where you're going with that.
Ultimately, we decided to move away from the project. It was going to logistically it'd be a nightmare with the way we were going to have to do everything. And so we never did make it, but it was a cool idea, and the beer came out awesome. So all in all, a great partnership. Even still.
Yeah, yeah. That was definitely on us, not on them. So there's an example of something we didn't make.
Yeah.
As far as something we did make that just like collab-wise, it turned out real wild. I mean, it's hard to move away from the Brewer Select finish.
Yeah.
Probably, at least for like what's in bottles right now. We did a set. We did a Vintner Select and a Brewer Select. So okay. Wine barrel finish, beer barrel finish.
Yep.
Both of those were local. We thought they both turned out great. They were a lot of fun, but they... The reception that we got on them
yeah.
kind of clued us in on the fact that this maybe isn't something that's actually that normal.
Okay.
And so by comparison, or maybe by like what people in the market are expecting or looking for, we felt that was, I guess, a little bit more off the wall than we had originally anticipated it being. And that was a Cabernet Sauvignon and Grenache finish on the wine side.
All right. Wine
group? The wine barrel.
Wine barrel?
Wine barrel and Parker.
And then okay. The beer was a Imperial Peanut Butter Porter barrel finish.
All right.
And that was Peak View.
Peak View? Okay.
Peak View. And that one sat in our three-way barrels that were then refilled with whiskey after the three-way whiskey and the beer. So it had a lot going on.
Yeah, that sounds like that'd be hard to parse through all the flavors on that.
It is dessert. It is a dessert whiskey. It's not super sweet. So when I say dessert, I don't mean sweet.
No.
But it has that toasted coconut, dark chocolate, caramel, like kind of deep brown sugar flavors from all of the maple and the porter and everything coming together. So it's just that really decadent, like coconut macaron kind of
okay
flavor palette to it, which is wonderful, but it's not super sugary.
Our original collab was the B Squared honey whiskey barrels. So I can't confirm this factually. I think we were one of the first, at least among the first, to work with them on something where they did their whiskey barrel aged honey in our barrels
yeah.
and returned them to us. And this was a few years ago. We actually do the honey barrels ourselves now. And that was, I thought at the time, a very neat thing to have these like rich, natural honey flavored whiskeys that had a little bit of that like actual natural honey, Colorado honey
yeah.
in them. And you know, there's There's a few other ones floating around in the market now. We see you guys that are also very good. So that's, I wouldn't say that that one's like wild anymore. I think at the time when we were first working on it, it was a splash in the market because it was just something people weren't really used to.
Yeah.
And the whiskey barrel aged honey was amazing. But now it's harder for me to say that one's like more out there versus I think those like beer and wine barrel finishes definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Shocked folks more than what we were expecting anyway.
There's another distillery that I've worked with a little bit that did a peanut butter stout whiskey barrel and then put the whiskey back into it after the stout was done. And I enjoyed it, but it definitely is. It's a very odd combination.
You don't see a ton of them either.
No.
For one other shout out, Laws did a terrific single malt aged and American single malt aged mm-hmm. in a stout barrel that's to date one of my favorites.
In the stout, yeah, just the regular stout barrel. I remember that bottle, mm-hmm. and yeah, I agree. That was a very, very good release. I mean, they do a pretty good job with a lot of the stuff that they do as well, but that one in particular, I agree. I do remember that one coming out, and that was a big deal.
That one got us kind of fired up, I think, because we do have some stout finishes aging right now that should be a lot of fun. We also have an ice cream brown ale.
Oh yeah, so
finish-ish.
a couple of rapid fire special mentions on our weird finishes.
Okay, yeah,
we got a couple of different things going right now. There is one with 222. It is their Granny Gear. For anyone who is familiar with the Granny Gear product that they produce, it is a specific type of moose track ice cream with strawberries, raspberries, and blackberries, I think.
Okay.
And they aged that in some of our bourbon barrels, and now we have bourbon back in those.
Ooh.
Doing an ice cream sort of Belgian strong ale finish.
Okay.
We are doing stout finishes with Los Dos and Denver Brewing Company, where they took a honey barrel in our cinnamon maple vanilla bourbon barrels and aged stouts, and we've combined those together at aging bourbon right now. And then... the bumbling around. I want to mention that for sure. So back to Elizabeth Brewing Company.
Yeah.
Those guys are awesome. We love you guys. We gave them a three-way barrel, the cinnamon maple vanilla bourbon. They aged their white horchata stout in it and released their high-proof bumbling around release for the holidays. Well, we got that back, and what better to put in a white horchata stout barrel than more cinnamon maple vanilla bourbon?
Makes sense.
And that one is getting ready to come out for the holidays, I think, because it is just, oh, it's so good.
People say our cinnamon vanilla maple is called, we call it three-way.
The three-way,
people,
yeah.
People say that that's holidays in a glass. When they taste this, they're going to be like, oh, that.
That's holidays. Eggnog who? Like, yeah. Come on.
So one of my previous episodes, I worked, got to interview a photographer, former Army vet. He does dog hunting photography too, and then goes out to like Kansas and does the hunting trips, takes the pictures, get to work with the dogs and all that stuff. But as I told him that I was coming down here to interview you guys today, he's like, okay, they've got this one, and I think they call it three-way. I'm like, yes, they do. And he goes, this is the best whiskey I've had in a long time. I'm like, so.
Love that.
Okay. Yep. Instantly, noticed there. So shout out Chuck with the three-way. He heavily implied I should be bringing him a bottle back, so we'll see how I'm feeling by the end of this.
Thank you, Chuck.
Oh, that's awesome. So another thing that I know you guys do here, I mean, obviously the cool collaborations are really fun. One thing that I've seen online that you guys do, and I haven't had one yet, but a roll your own old fashioned. And so I think that's
there.
Yep.
It is.
Fantastic. I think that's an awesome idea just to start. What's the craziest cocktail you've had to make from somebody rolling that?
Okay, so I do have one. I actually do. And it's crazy not because it's inherently bad.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have worked, and it worked so well. And that's what made it crazy.
Okay.
I believe this was back with the Pease whiskey when we had that released. So it was Pease whiskey, it was s'mores syrup, it was, I believe, mint bitters, and then smoke in a cherry.
Whoa, okay.
Which, all of those things separately, I mean, you can find uses for them, but together sounds like a mess.
Yeah, and that ended up working out.
I had to make one. So it was for someone else. I made myself one first because I wanted to know, like, is this even... something I want to put in front of somebody.
Can I serve this to a customer?
Exactly. Yep. Like, are they going to lose respect for us completely after this? And so I made one, and I am so shocked because it tasted like Girl Scout cookie the whole beginning of the drink, and as it diluted, it tasted like cherry cordial.
Ooh.
And it was one of the most magnificent dessert old fashions accidentally made in our bar ever. Don't know how we got there, but it was definitely one of those old fashions that should not have worked, and it did.
Okay.
That's probably the most fun thing about the roll for old fashioned
yeah.
as a concept is you sometimes get these bills that seem like they're going to be absolutely insane. And I think out of the thousands we've made, maybe one has been returned ever.
One returned. There's been a couple that are a little questionable because celery bitters exist.
Yeah.
But
but that's, you know, there, sometimes in D&D you critical fail, and
yeah.
so there needs to be punishment, and sometimes that's the punishment right. is celery bitters.
Or 100%. Spicy whiskey.
Or spicy whiskey.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a weird combination.
Yeah, but. Although I will say this, just while we're on the topic, the pepper whiskey in an old fashioned has turned a little bit of a cult following here. Often
okay.
people stumble on it by rolling it because it is the nat one on the spirit.
Okay.
You end up with a spicy old fashioned, but I've had a few people come back and order them again on purpose.
Interesting.
Yeah. So just kind of one of those things. If you haven't had a spicy old fashioned and they go down like soda at this point for you, spicy old fashioned slow you down and they are delicious.
All right. It sounds like I'm going to be coming down and rolling an old fashioned sometime soon because I'm going to need to hopefully not crit fail across the board, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Depends on how my rolling luck is going that day, I suppose.
You can use an inspiration point to re-roll one of
That's
them.
True. Yeah.
Okay.
You do get a point of inspiration to re-roll.
That
so.
That is nice. That is nice. yeah, I roll really poorly when I've been playing D&D recently, so I'm a little nervous as to what will come out of this experiment, but
some
hey, we'll see.
The best thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the best stories come out of the worst rolls.
Yep.
That's
yeah.
just the truth.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple that I've gotten out that are just tons of fun based off of a one or a two, but so I mean that's really awesome. What's your favorite cocktail that you make that's not a roll your own, like whether it's on the menu now or not? What's like the you think's the best one you guys do down here?
And we've had a lot of seasonal menus, so it might be something we did, not something we do currently.
Mm-hmm.
Although you guys did such a killer job with that last delight.
Oh, yeah.
Turkish Delight inspired last word riff.
Okay.
That's just terrific. That's been one of my favorites that's come off the seasonal menus in a while.
I've liked that one a lot. I think for me, it would have been last season's seasonal menu. I don't know. I'm torn. But last seasonal menu was the Mariah Vucure, which was phenomenal. That was like a spiced pear, like poached pear inspired Vucure riff.
Okay.
That was insane. But I do want to honorable shout out the, what is the one on the menu right now with the tea? The Lady Grey.
Okay.
The Lady Grey is a Lady Grey tea-infused bourbon whiskey cocktail.
Interesting.
That is, it is such a simple drink. There's not a lot done to it to make it this, you know, huge riff. But all of the flavors play so well together, you'll never have a whiskey cocktail that tastes like that. It's just one of my favorites on the menu right now.
Okay. That sounds pretty good, actually, because I know that those flavors seem like they'd play well enough together to make something pretty cool. So
we had, this is a few menus ago, but we had a lavender espresso martini that was absolutely killer, too.
Man, people still ask for that.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to Savannah on that one. That was a killer recipe she put together for that. But I think,
yeah.
like, I probably stopped drinking espresso martinis after that went away because they
just didn't add up or didn't measure up. Yeah. That's the sign of a good one there. So how do you come up with these seasonal menus? Like, what goes into the process behind making a new?
I mean, I would love to say it's some, like, really cool story behind it. It's mostly just like absentmindedly like taking a shower or something and then inspiration strikes.
Mm-hmm. Deconstructing a pizza.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, well, a lot of that one in particular, there's some things that happen where I'm like, is it possible or is that something that's worth trying?
Okay.
And then exploring that concept leads to a awesome drink. Sometimes it leads to a bunch of prep that went nowhere, but you never know. like my fruity pebble clarified cocktail that was supposed to be so good. Like that was gonna be like a Sunday morning cartoon cocktail.
Interesting.
Yeah, thought it was an awesome idea. The clarification took all the cereal taste out. You couldn't taste any of it. So never saw the light of day. We're reworking it. There's going to be a new direction for that in the future.
The gears are turning, I can tell you.
Yes.
Mitch has been largely responsible for all of our cocktail menus that have come out until just very recently.
Okay.
And he won't say this himself, but he does an incredible job of pushing the boundaries of flavor with really inspiring combinations or riffs on things, but keeping it within a realm that's enjoyable to the average cocktail enjoyer.
Okay.
It's not too out there to turn people away from it, but it's intriguing and enigmatic enough to bring them in and make them want to try it.
That's some pretty high praise.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. That's very kind.
Because, I mean, that definitely seems like a very difficult line to toe and be able to make something that, like you're saying, is enjoyable to many people, but not something that many others have already done.
We sold a lot of clarified pizza cocktails, so we're doing something right.
That's awesome. Well, I do have some other questions and stuff, but before we continue on, I do have to just give a shout out to the sponsor of the show, Centennial Cuts out of Southeast Denver. So beef company sponsors the show. They make some of the best beef I've ever had, if not the best beef I've ever had. Beef jerky is absolutely phenomenal. And this episode's coming out pretty soon, and Mother's Day's right around the corner. So they've got the lavender vanilla tallow lotion, which my wife swears by had to buy her an extra jar of it when we bought our meat package and all of that. So if you're looking for a Mother's Day gift, that's a great idea right there. If you're looking for I want a snack gift, I can't recommend their beef jerky enough. I love the spicy beef jerkies. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. And then their beef just in general is fantastic. So thank you, Centennial Cuts, for sponsoring this episode. Head to centennialcuts.com, use promo code MHBR for 10% off of your order, and they'll deliver it right to your door. We just got the 250-pound bundle to just stock up to make sure we had meat for literal days, months, years. Delivered it right to our door. I mean, seriously, drove right up, dropped it off in the garage. We loaded it into the freezer. It was the easiest thing we possibly could have done. So thank you, Centennial Cuts, for sponsoring today's show. And we'll jump back into it. So one thing I've noticed.
That's what we have, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was going to mention we actually sell their beef jerky as well.
Yeah. If you want to support Branch and Barrel Distilling and Centennial Cuts.
At the same time.
Enjoy your beef jerky in our tasting room.
So come down here, roll your cocktail, get some beef jerky, and just have an absolutely phenomenal afternoon.
Boom.
Yeah. Perfect.
We could not sell them. They're in Centennial with us.
Like, yeah.
How are you supposed to not sell the best beef jerky I've ever had when they're made in our backyard?
Right? 100%. You got to have that in the distillery then. So that's phenomenal. That's absolutely awesome. Good to know. I might, then next time I come down and roll the old fashioned, I'll make sure to pick up some beef jerky as well.
Yeah.
I've noticed online you guys do the charity cocktails as well. So how do you come up with the charity cocktail? How do you guys like partner with the charities that you're donating to?
So I'll let you talk about the charity aspect because that is a changing environment right now. The cocktail itself was designed actually from when I first took over the tasting room. It is well known and well documented in many cocktail book that bartenders get restless.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to be creative. They want to try something new. They don't want to make the same drinks constantly without something to keep them interested. So I was doing cocktails of the month. That was just something I was doing, whether it was an old-fashioned recipe, something new. And I thought that was a really neat idea, and it went away because our menu kept growing. And I was like, well, this is just one less thing to have to do. I brought it back. So the benefit to doing it this way is we only have to keep supplies for a month. So it can be a really elaborate cocktail. It could be just like really cool garnishes. There's a lot that we can do with it because we don't have to supply it for a season or a year or anything like that. So it allows us to do something very creative, very interesting, and very limited.
Yeah.
And we have put it toward doing local charities where they'll get half the proceeds from that drink.
Okay.
Just to help out our local charities.
Yeah.
Yeah, we wanted to give back to the community and build new relationships in the community, and it gives these guys an incredible opportunity to kind of theory craft cocktails and then test them in a controlled environment. So they can see if something like absolutely hits, like, oh, yeah, love this, we'd love to see it on the menu. Cool, that's great data for us. You know, we'll try to incorporate it in the future. And the fact that it also supports charities is kind of the icing on the cake. Like, it benefits us, it benefits them. We've had a lot of ways that we link up with the charities. Sometimes it's just people we meet at events that we're doing around the state. Sometimes it's people who come to us and say, hey, we heard you were doing this, we'd love to be a part of it. Sometimes it's, you know, we're members of the South Metro Chamber of Commerce, so okay, we meet a lot of charitable organizations through that. That's kind of a new thing for this year that we've been building those relationships, so we've met a lot of cool people that way. And we're really open to working with whomever. Sometimes it's just a cause that one of us is very particular about or just would really like to see represented, and so that's sometimes what drives the decision making. But it works out best for us, at least, when the charities we're working with want to do more. Like, they want to partner up, they want to, you know, host, have us at events that they're doing, so we can bring the value add to that as well. And of course that benefits us with the exposure. So we're really just trying to do something for the community, but also in a way that helps get our brand name out there. And that's awesome. On the tasting room side, you know, these guys get to experiment more, which they love.
That's a win-win-win right there. Yeah. I mean, that's everything that you could, that's the best way to do it. Especially getting your, like, I mean, getting the name out obviously is huge, but being able to do it in a way that benefits the community, as you know, in general as well, is really, really awesome. So
we've met some incredible people through the programming too, which is really neat. Just built some lasting relationships with a lot of these folks.
There's many of them we end up redoing year after year, just because they've done so many things with us, we've done so many things with them, that they're practically a staple in our house at this point.
Yeah.
So we've done multiple events with them for that reason.
And that's awesome.
It's good, like you were saying, to make these relationships, meet good folk who want to do good by the community, and we're able to be a part of that. We're grateful for the opportunity.
That's fantastic. And I mean, I think that speaks to kind of what we were talking about earlier with you guys being a truly Colorado top to bottom, the ability to give back to local charities, local, like the community as well, I think is just a huge, I mean, that's just great. Don't know how else to really phrase that, but that's really cool. So do you try to theme the cocktail around the charity, or is it just more of a what you're feeling because you want to experiment?
I think the answer to that is probably wildly inconsistent.
Yes.
That's very fair.
Yes and no. We have done some. For instance, I believe it was the first charity cocktail we ever did was the Cold Brew Meowtini for Colorado Pet Pantry. So it was a cold brew martini with like a cinnamon cat stencil and a, what is it, long du chat, a cat tongue biscuit on the edge.
Okay.
And so it was like a very themed cocktail for Colorado Pet Pantry. But this month is the Crisis Center, and we are doing a sort of White Russian riff with a graham cracker syrup, a peanut butter Nutella cream, and our coffee whiskey with our Brewer Select that we mentioned earlier.
Okay.
And very, very unrelated.
Completely unrelated. However, very delicious. Yeah. So thankfully, people seem to be responding well to it, so we're going to be able to donate a lot of money this month, we're hoping.
That's awesome. Well, and that's cool. I mean, it's like the show Bob's Burgers, right? Every day he's got the burger of the day, and he's always trying to come up with a theme. I imagine if you tried to make every cocktail match the charity, like the chocolate meowtini, you might go insane.
Yeah, well, they certainly wouldn't all be hitters.
Yeah,
that's for sure. You know, we could force something.
Yeah,
it'd be like, oh, isn't that a funny joke, haha, it works. And it's like, yeah, but it's fine, you know.
Right.
And that's no good, because then no money is going to go to the charity, because no one's going to buy it.
Right.
So yeah, I would rather make sure that the cocktail tastes great first and foremost. If we can make it thematic, great, we love that.
Yeah.
But if you can't, just make it good.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I think that's awesome. Man, all right. I know that there was another question I wanted to ask you guys as well, and I'm going to have to try and think of it. But in the meantime, I know you guys have done some of the kind of, like, your more limited releases, especially as the blender that, you know, that's your position. What's your favorite release that you guys have done to date?
That's a really hard question.
This is genuinely painful for him to try to answer.
It really is.
Like choosing your favorite kid?
Yeah, it really is a lot like that.
More intense than that, honestly.
It could be. I don't have kids, so I don't know. I would... it's hard because I have like some single barrels that I picked that I'm in love with. Like, mm-hmm. I think it was single barrel 5 that won double gold. And so like that was a double gold single barrel that was just incredible. I love that to death. Single barrel 3 was the first single barrel I picked, and that was like a trail mix, peanutty, M&M-y kind of flavor. And I love that. I think my favorite, though, I think I have to say Peas. Peas, Please.
Okay.
Just because it is so far outside the box, and it delivered on flavor in a way that was unexpected and very welcomed.
For reference, this was a whiskey that we distilled with corn, barley, and Colorado Field peas.
Yes, I got to try that. And so you guys had an event with Trinity Cigar Co.
Yes.
Came down with that. The Colorado Spirits Collective guy out of the Springs is the one who kind of was like, hey, you need to come check this out. So came up here, hung out, tried that whiskey. I was like, yep, this is absolutely fantastic. And didn't buy a bottle. And I don't know why I didn't buy a bottle. And still to this day, I joined an episode of another podcast, Locked On Avalanche. And I got to do some like player pairings and stuff there. But we were talking and he made a joke about like, oh, what if somebody distilled a whiskey from Pistachios? Because that's one of their sponsors. And I was like, well, you say that like it would never happen. But let me tell you about Branch and Barrel. And yeah, that one was a wild pick. So I can see why that one would be up there.
I could kick myself for making the same mistake. I kept telling myself like, oh, there's bottles left. I'm going to grab one before it's gone. Didn't. Don't have one. Regret it.
Yep.
It was so good.
I think I still have a bottle stashed. I'll share it with you.
Appreciate it.
There you go. Yeah. I got a little excited when you said barrel before bottle there and was hoping that meant no, that. But no, just a bottle. Yeah, that's...
There is more to come, though.
All right. Yeah. Cool.
Fret not. More will come.
Yeah. Awesome. Peas, please will return.
Yeah. Yep. It was sweet. It was a fan favorite. And it's, again, such a colorful release. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to have its time in the sun again.
Okay. That's awesome. You heard it here first.
One of your other undisputed hitters was the first weeded bourbon
blend
that you put out. And this was, you know, first for Branch and Barrel.
Okay.
Releasing a, you know, multiple of our barrels batted together, going into the market. So there's a lot of pressure. And it was, like, easily one of the best things we've ever put out. And the way it was received by everybody that tried it, like, was humbling. We were just amazed by how much people enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And so for, you know, you're coming off of blending some unusual things and then a lot of our flagship bourbon, which is what we're most known for, of course.
Yep.
And then having this challenge of, like, here's something with, you know, different flavor profile, still kind of similar, but to be able to knock that one out like that, that to me, that's my favorite of Mitch's blend projects.
I think in measurement, it probably is the most popular blend I've ever done, for sure. That one also won double gold, which I was very
twice
excited
now,
about.
Actually.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've actually won double gold on that twice now.
Double gold.
There's a song in that, but I'm not going to go there. The weeded was very good, and I still recommend it to anyone coming here who's not a huge whiskey fan.
Yeah.
Because it is so soft and approachable and easy, and it's just going to... It's going to ease you into whiskey so gently. It is such a beautiful blend. It's very kind again. Thank you. But that was a really good one. You're right.
I always like a really good weeded. There's a couple of weededs in Colorado that I've had so far that I've been like, you know, this kind of knocks it out of the park. I haven't had your guys's yet. The 4-grain bourbon from Branch and Barrel, though. That's one of my, like, I brought, what is it, the Rock something, and I can't think of the name right now, but it was the 4-grain one that you guys had.
Yeah.
Brought that over to a buddy of mine's house to play D&D, actually. And so sat down to play that, and he's like, 4-grain bourbons are, like, that's his favorite style of bourbon. He's like, wonderful. Absolutely gorgeous. So there you go. More of my friends complimenting you guys' whiskey. Share it around everywhere that I can. Everything Colorado, I share around everything, everywhere that I can. So you guys just happen to be getting a lot of compliments recently.
Much appreciated.
You know, we'll take them. We're happy to get them.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say enough about this one. The 7-year is just, I haven't even taken another sip, and I'm still tasting it, like you were saying. Like, it hangs around for a long time.
It really does, but it gives you those nice, like, cocoa, nutty, cherry, like, almost Honeycrisp apple. There's just a lot going on in there that every time I go back for another sip, there's something new.
Yeah.
And I love that about it too. It's got a lot of length to the story of that particular pour.
Yeah. No, I would absolutely agree with that. You know what it was? You guys recently, I think it was also possibly with Parhopper, but the new Arena Football League.
Colorado partnered Spartans.
Up. Yep, the Spartans.
Yep.
How do you guys end up sponsoring a Arena Football League?
Well, we get really lucky with Jay, to be honest. I'm not, like, I love hyping him up, but he's also just, he's put in the work, he's made the connections, he's an incredible networker. And it actually was just kind of happenstance. My sales manager and I were walking into to Local Drive to do something. I actually don't recall what. And Jay was there meeting with Tony and Quint, the two of the Spartans guys, like big guys in the Spartans company. And we just kind of got to talking to them, and they were talking about whiskey. And I think Jay had already mentioned that he worked with us and we might be willing to collaborate with them. And of course, the answer is yes. Like, we'd love to do something like that.
Yeah.
So we are now one of their official sponsors for the 2025 season, and they were pretty quick to want to discuss a private label project for the Colorado Spartans.
Okay.
They like whiskey. They love supporting local, which is huge. We obviously really appreciate that. And they were pretty much on board right away to, like, hey, let's green light this. Let's make it happen. So we came up with a label for them. Mitch did a blend for them with actually, that was kind of a team collaboration, too.
That was collaborative.
Our sales manager, Forrest, and Mitch sat down together and were like, cool, let's make it happen. We're going to do it this way. They tried it. They loved it. It was one of our first, I guess it is our first blend of bourbon and rye, which is really exciting.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Yeah, and we wanted to do it at a price point that wasn't prohibitive to the market. We wanted people to get this bottle in their hands. We wanted them to enjoy it. We wanted people to be able to drink it. And again, like, we encounter a lot of humbling situations. Like, we do think our whiskey's pretty damn good, but when other people, like, we see them enjoying it, that's just, it means the world to us, right?
Yeah.
And so we had an event the other night with a Spartans down at Highlands Ranch, and we were able to take the bottle, and the players were getting to try it, and they were loving it. And it was just like this incredible, like, magical experience seeing these guys enjoy something that we were able to make happen so quickly.
Yeah, it's one thing for us to enjoy our bourbon. It's a whole other thing to make a bourbon that we're proud of that someone else loves.
Yeah.
There's not a more rewarding feeling in the world, and that's what keeps bringing us back to do this again and again.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. I mean, because like you're saying, it's awesome to enjoy your own product, but when you see somebody else really buying into it as well.
Yeah. It was really cool of them to take a chance on us, too. Tony, I don't believe is necessarily a huge drinker, so it was really cool to see him being willing to, you know, come down here, he took the tour with us and just, you know, asked great questions. It seemed like he really enjoyed the experience, and then just seeing the other guys get so excited about it.
Yeah. Man, that is definitely really cool. And damn, when's the last time Colorado had an Arena Football team? It's been a little bit, and so cool to see that come back in and you guys get to be a part of that as well.
It's a high energy sport. We're here for it.
Yeah, right. I don't know if the rules are the same. When it was the Colorado Crush forever ago, they played it then Pepsi Center, now Ball Arena. But that's the last time I've seen anything Arena Football, and so I remember it being like, holy cow, this is crazy different than, you know, going down and watching Denver play at Mile High. So I gotta imagine that's pretty fun. Pretty fun to go to those events.
It's entertainment.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's pretty wicked. Awesome. Sweet. I mean, guys, again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me here. I'd love to sit and, you know, just have you guys talk about everything that you do for the next many hours. But I know we all got lives to do outside of this as well. So crushing it again with the spirits. Like I said, I get a lot of times you guys come up in conversation and everybody's always got great things to say. So this was one that I was really excited to be able to do. Hoping to talk to a lot of distilleries, and hopefully sometime in the future we can do another episode or do some other form of collaboration, because that's my goal, is keep pushing everything Colorado, specifically around beer, wine, and spirits mainly, because Mile High Bourbon and Rye is not a beer name, but So yeah, this was awesome. Josh and Mitch, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me here. Tell people where they can find you, how they can come down and support you themselves.
Well, we'd of course love for you to come visit our tasting room. If you think we talked a lot tonight, we will talk your ear off for as long as you'll have us if you come see us at our tasting room. This is your tour guide for a tour and tasting experience. He does a phenomenal job. Genuinely one of the most fun and entertaining tours in Colorado if you're into distilleries. And that's not just because of Mitch. That's also because of our fantastically fun Willy Wonka's Whiskey Factory that he gets to talk about. But you will have an incredible time experiencing that. The cocktails are fantastic. We've got, what, 25 different bottles you can try right now. Please come help us drink them.
It's close to that for sure.
Yes, please come help us finish those. We are also available throughout Colorado. We have a real nifty store locator on our website, www.babdistilling.com, where you can hop over to the store locator page. That's actually fed by data from our distributor. Oh, so cool. Like when a new store picks us up or a new bar picks us up, it's on that store locator.
Right away. Awesome. I'll link to that down in the show notes, so make it nice and easy for people to click and find you guys.
Yeah, appreciate that. And also, thank you for having us on. This has been a blast. It's been so good to sit here and chat with you. This has really made the day, so we appreciate you having us.
That's awesome. Thanks. I appreciate that a ton. These conversations are, I mean, this is what I, when I started this website 10 years ago, this will be my 10th year in December. I'll come up on the 10th anniversary, but when I started that, this is kind of what I envisioned, is being able to learn more and share the story out. So really glad to hear that that it was good for you guys. And we'll, like I said, we'll post everything out in the show notes. So check the show notes on that. You'll be able to find Branch and Barrel, follow them on their social media. Their reels, I find very entertaining. I think they crack me up anyway, but
We have fun making them.
My wife does say sometimes I'm a little easily entertained, but you know, I still think it's quite enjoyable to watch.
I think easily entertained.
I think you're specifically our market.
Yeah, they're like whiskey easily entertained. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. There we go. So yeah, follow Branch and Barrel online, BAB Distilling across, I think, all the social media platforms that you guys are on. So check them out. Real entertaining. And then if you've enjoyed the show, if you don't mind, give it on YouTube. I'm really terrible about this. You're supposed to smash that follow button. No, give us a follow, like the episode. If you're listening on Spotify, on Apple, give us a rating, give us a review. All of those things help promote this show, which allows me to talk to more distilleries across the state. And in turn allows more people to talk about their story and get it out there. And I think that's hugely important to really helping to continue grow Colorado's really awesome distilling industry, because every one of them across the state, I haven't interacted with a bad person at a distillery yet, and I don't suspect that I will. So
it's a good community and we like to work together. So it's a really good environment for distillation out here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. So yeah, give us a follow too online, social medias at Mile High Bourbon. You can find us again on everything except for TikTok, because I just don't get it. But then also check us out, milehighbourbon.com. You can support the show directly. Again, check out Centennial Cuts, purchase from them. Purchases through them mean they'll keep supporting and sponsoring the show. And of course that supports me, but also you can head on to milehighbourbon.com/shop and you can purchase. I've got some Rocks glasses on there. I've got some new glasses and I'm still keeping it mostly under wraps, but I've got a hell of a cool project that's coming up pretty soon. Like, I'm pretty pumped. I'll tell you guys off camera, because I'll share it with you and possibly talk to you guys about something else in the future that I'd love to do as well. So we can do that. So yeah, check us out, milehighbourbon.com, milehighbourbon.com/shop. And then again, as I always point out, much like their charity cocktails, proceeds of every sale that I have through the website, I donate some of it back to Colorado charities. Right now I'm working closely with one trying to get their feet off the ground. It's Paw Prints Pet Rescue out of Commerce City. They are newly started. They just got their license official. They've housed their first dog as of, I believe, last week as of recording this. So starting that, and they are raising money to build a much bigger facility and do a lot of really good things for Colorado's homeless pets. So link to them will be in the show notes as well. And yeah, so Josh, Mitch, thank you again. Your glasses are empty, but you know, cheers anyway. I appreciate the pour of whiskey here. And yeah, we'll see you guys all on the next episode of a Colorado Craft Podcast. Oh, one more shout out before I go, because I almost always forget them and I should not. Check out Roma Ransom. They do the intro outro music for every episode. Phenomenal two-person band. The music kicks ass. They're blast to watch live. And you find them at distilleries a lot of times too. So again, maybe go try some local Colorado spirits and support a Colorado band. So awesome. Thank you everybody for joining. And like I said, we'll catch you next time. Cheers.